We're doing the Sefer HaMidot, and we're beginning the ninth chapter in this edition. It's page Ayin Vav. And the Magen Midovna is about to clarify a point which you might have thought of in the past, but I find this chapter to be one of the most fantastic chapters we've learned thus far. אבל הדברים אשר ימנעו אותך מהשכיל לדעת את אלוקי אביך. The things that prevent you from really knowing the God of your father. What's standing in the way, says the Magid Midovna. He just explained in the previous chapter why it's logical to go after this. Now he's saying, okay, so what's getting in the way? What keeps a person from really feeling solid confidence in his faith? There are two things primarily that get in the way. Achat, firstly, because from the time you came to existence, you became accustomed to and you grew up among the material world. Everything around you is material. And your existence, your life, was among creatures that are all perceived with the senses. Everything around us, everything we come in contact with, is material, is physical, and its perception is through our senses. And when do you have something in this world that people value, that's considered important? That's something which is bigger in the way a person senses it. Think about what people value. People value money because of what money can do, the power in the physical world. People value things they enjoy. The greater the sensation, the greater our senses derive pleasure from something, the more we give it value. The more important it is to us. The more the world idolizes it. That's the way things work in the physical world. And you're also accustomed to perceive things that come to existence only after they've been missing. Like everything in the world. First, you don't have it, then you have it. You plant a seed, you don't have a tree, then the tree comes to being. Things come to being in a physical world. But the existence of something that is elevated beyond our senses and cannot be sensed by our senses, and he is separate, he is not from the physical world, he does not have a beginning, he does not have a starting point, that's not so simple to accept. Meaning we're touching on a point. He's saying what we've often said. We said the first definition of God. You guys remember? We've said this many times. First definition of God is that question mark. You guys remember? Come on, we've said it many times. We said, from our perspective, man comes from man, comes from man, comes from man. Okay, where does that man come from? From man. So you say, okay, but there's got to be a starting point. So you say, yeah, but that starting point, where did that come from? So what do you have to answer? You have to say, okay, so there's some starting point that doesn't have the same starting point we're accustomed to. Meaning, there's our set of the material world where something comes from something, and then you reach a point where you say, okay, no, there's something that does not come from something, because that starting point has to be something which is beyond my perception, which does not fall into my physical world, into my realm of logic, where everything comes from something else and has a starting point. That question mark, what is that? That's the first definition of God. We've discussed this many times. No one here seems to know what I'm talking about. Many times we've said, this is the first definition of God, that question mark. That's something which is beyond my logic, which is beyond my limitations, which is beyond the scope of the physical world and the limitations we know in the physical world. So he says, yeah, but that's not something that's so easy to accept. Like any time you'd hear something that sounds extraordinary, so the first thing that gets in the way is, he says, our habit to be living in a physical world. We have a way in which we see things work, and things impress us based upon how they impress the physical world, how they impress our senses, and then suddenly we're introduced to a concept that's beyond our physical world, greater than our physical world, and cannot be perceived by our senses, maybe perceived by our logic, but not by our senses. And that is something that's not easy to accept. That you have something that doesn't have a starting point, that doesn't fit into our realm of logic, and is greater than everything we know, and yet not perceived by our senses. So that's point number one. But point number two, and I'm not sure which point gets in the way more, if I had to vote, I would vote for point number two, even though our logic dictates it's point number one. But he says point number two, shenit, the second thing that really gets in the way of recognizing God, hagava, is our own pride. I think if there's one thing that that gets in our way, it's that. Asher lapetach atatrovitz, that's always standing there waiting to get us. And until today, you live this world like it was the world to come. You could hear people talking. People sometimes say that openly. I want to enjoy everything in this world. I had a guy tell me that this week. I invited him to my house, and he said, no, if I come, I'll stay in a hotel, and he'll come visit me. So I said, don't you want to be with us for a Shabbos meal? We have better food than at a hotel. He says, no. I got to enjoy every minute of this world. And in a hotel, I have air conditioning. In your house, I don't. And in a hotel, I have more room. In your house, I don't. And he's going back and forth. And I said, okay, can't argue with the guy. Says the Magid Midovna, our pride, till today we've been living in this world as though we're in the world to come. Kadam oseb shelo, as though we own everything. Let me just enjoy. Kilum tziyutcha mchuyevet mehaskamatcha vechefetz libcha. As though your sheer existence is because you desire it to be so. We like to feel, in the words of today's day and age, in control. Right? I want to be in control. V'hi ha-masecha nesucha libcha, and that's really the mask that covers your heart, says the Magid Midovna, listarer gam istarer, to make you feel like you're the boss. Le'akshiach levavcha, to harden the heart, shelo yerav lecha ha-emunah, so that the concept of God is not sweet at all. Because the concept of God means I am not boss. He says that's the second reason why it is difficult for us to connect with this concept.
That's kind of what you were saying before, how you don't understand. That's right, you don't understand. Understanding of trying to understand everything is like kind of being
controlled.
Oh, yefe, yefe. Levilti su
me'amon tanuhim azmanim ha-mechalelim b'chalelim l'umatcha u'mechalelim yif'atcha. Says, the belief of God automatically means I can't spend my life listening to music. And I want to spend my life listening to music. And music over here is a metaphor, obviously. It doesn't mean only music. He says, really, all these temptations, he's doing a play on word. He says, they're all playing the flute and they're all playing your downfall. Mm-hmm. He's using a play on word, mechalel, could mean to play a flute, and mechalel could also mean to plot, to plot one's downfall. So he says that the second great cause, the second great barrier between us and God is our own pride. And that we could really expand on this thought. Meaning, any person like the Rambam writes, one of the great barriers, if not the great barrier, to accepting the Judaism is promiscuity. I want to do what I want to do. And if there's one great desire in the world, it's that. And if I accept it, then I can't do what I want to do. And he's expanding it to encompass not only that, to encompass everything I want to do. I want to be boss. And if I accept this, then I'm not boss. I want to enjoy life. And if I accept this, I can't exactly enjoy life the way I'd like to enjoy life. He says, take for example, kiklav asher kotvim alav sefer Torah. If you have a piece of parchment that you write on in the sefer Torah, you're not allowed to write on that piece of parchment unless you put it in acid, a type of acid called afatzim. Mei afatzim. We take gallnuts and we put it in water. We're really taking water with tannic acid, and that's how we work the hide in order to be able to write a Sefer Torah on it. We have to soften the innate hardness that is in this piece of parchment. Why? Because the Talmud says one of the definitions of writing is writing that cannot be forged without recognition. Meaning, by definition, in order for something to be considered writing in halacha, like writing a Sefer Torah, it has to be that the only way to erase on that would leave a mark. So a Sefer Torah that has not been worked with this tannic acid, you could forge on it, you could erase and rewrite, and there would be no mark that something was erased. In order for something to qualify as writing for a get or a Sefer Torah or any legal halachic writing, it has to be on a type of parchment where you could tell if there was an erasure mark. Kenasu, the envy of Shalich Tov Alev Shum De Amitit, he says, just like that, there is no way to write any truth on one's heart till you soften it from its stubbornness. He says, just like the hide has to be softened before you could write on it, so too the heart has to be softened. That is the brazenness, that is the control that a person is accustomed to from the time he's a teenager. What's the thing a teenager wants the most? Let me do what I want. Just give me the keys, just give me the credit card, and don't leave me a curfew, right? What?
Never see him again.
Until the card maxes, right? And if not for that, then the heart can easily take forgeries. And these forgeries are so plenty to come upon the heart. So it's not really accepted on the heart unless you work it and soften it, just like parchment that hasn't been worked. And furthermore, our sages say that the second the person is haughty, God distances himself from the person. Now, the Shamu'olav till our sages say, it's like a person is pushing the Shechina away. You guys see the Chiddush he just said in that Gemara? The Gemara says if a person walks in a haughty fashion, he walks straight up, he walks without a yarmulke, he walks like he's in control. Hot shot Joe, yeah? So then God says he's pushing my feet off of earth. The earth is supposed to be Hadom Raglav, the place which elevates God's feet, so to speak, God's resting place. And a person who walks like that pushes God out of the scene. So you read that Gemara, it seems like there's no room for the two of you. There's no room for God by him. But he's saying it's another concept. It means that when he will try to connect to Emunah, when he will try to connect to the truth, that's the idea that he's distancing God. He's distancing God from his own perception. When he is haughty, then he will have a harder time perceiving God. In just a second, as the Talmud says, God says, so to speak, he and I can't share the globe. There isn't enough room for the two of us. Yes? Correct. You're right. The Gemara says it about Kuma Zekufa. The Gemara doesn't say it about Nariyamaka. Today it might be encompassed by that, might not. The Gemara says, Kol Malech Dal Damot be Kuma Zekufa. I don't remember if the Gemara also says it about Giloy Arosh, I have to check. The Gemara says it about Kuma Zekufa, about a person who walks haughtily. I have to see. I don't remember. I have to look. Could be that was a misquote. Could be I have to check. לכן כל עוד אשר לא ראית לרקח ולהרחיק ממך את לב האבן ולהכניע את עצמך עד קצה האחרון. Therefore, so long as a person hasn't seen to distance that stone, heart of stone and to accept to be a humble person to the extreme, אין הקדושה שורה בך. Holiness cannot rest on the person. ולכן אין ענייני המקובלים עליך. Not only that, but the things aren't palatable to the person. They're unacceptable to him. V'gam ki tomar b'ficha ani ma'amin. And even if a person audibly says, I believe, kilu tomar ani ma'amin. The truth is, it's as though we were saying, I don't believe. V'chasher titvonen achi badvarim ha'matim ha'ile utayen b'hem, tirei yoshram ba'amitam. He says, and he hasn't said this line since the beginning of the work. He says, now I want you, brother, to look at these few sentences I just said and analyze them. He hasn't said that about any other part of the book. He says, these few sentences I just said, this, what we learned tonight, he says, I want you to think about this. Because if you analyze it, you'll see that it is honest and true. So how do we resolve this? Okay, we'll get there. But first, you have to realize that this is a tremendous point, a point that requires a lot of thought. Very often, a person thinks, why can't I get it? Why can't I get it? It doesn't make sense to me. And the problem is, you'll notice a lot of people begin by saying it doesn't make sense. When they reach the point when they could say it doesn't make sense to me, they're already 10 steps ahead, they're closer to understanding. Because they haven't put the fault in the concept, they've said, okay, I don't understand it. Maybe there is something here to understand. It's not easy to get to that stage. In yeshivas, we're trained to that. I still remember the 5th and 6th grade Rebbe, when they teach a Gemara and I'd say it doesn't make sense, they'd say, don't say it doesn't make sense. Say it doesn't make sense to you. So if you learn it in 5th and 6th grade, it doesn't sink in then. But by 10th, 11th grade, you start understanding, hey, that makes sense. If you're 30, 40, 50, and you walk into Mahon Meir, no one ever taught you this concept, so it's a little hard. It takes time to understand the concept, but it's an important concept. It's a level of humility. Maybe there's some wisdom here. Maybe there's something here that you don't understand yet, but give yourself time. So he says, that's the key. And again, notice he said 2 points. He focused a little bit on the second one, but he did say 2 points. One is we're accustomed to a physical world, and two is our own pride. These two things get in our way of perceiving the truth in the realization of the Creator.